renewing their revolutionary struggle. October 7th marked the reviving of the Palestinian revolution. And this revolution is going to continue with the support of the people of the region and the free will of the world. And we see that Israel have also lost its strategic positioning in the region. They're definitely a very strong in terms of military and economic power, but they're losing that as well. And Israel, we are witnessing the beginning of the end of the Zionist regime in Palestine.
Okay, I'm going to have to jump in there. We're running short of time. Thanks to spokesperson of the Masar Battle Movement, Khaled Barakat, joining us from Vancouver. And thanks to political economy analyst and researcher Clive Menzies, joining us from the British capital, London. And a special thanks to your viewers for staying with us on tonight's Spotlight. It's good night for now. See you next time.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details. And now we enlighten you with Ayah 35 to 37 of Surah Ali Imran, recited by Shahryar Parhizgar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Dhurriyatan ba'dha min ba'din wallahu samiyun 'alim. إذ قالت امرأة عمران رب إني نذرت لك ما في بطني محررا فتقبل مني إنك أنت السميع العليم فلما وضعتها قالت رب إني وضعتها أنثى والله أعلم بما وضعت وليس الذكر كالأنثى وإني سميتها مريم وإني أعيذها بك وذريتها من الشيطان الرجيم فتقبلها ربها بقبول حسن وأنبتها نباتا حسنا وكفلها زكريا كلما دخل عليها زكريا المحراب وجد عندها رزقا قال يا مريم أنى لك هذا قالت هو من عند الله إن الله يرزق من يشاء بغير حساب.
In the name of Allah, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. When the wife of Imran said, My Lord, dedicate to you what is in my belly in consecration, accept it from me. Indeed, you are the All-Hearing, the All-Knowing. And when she bore her, she said, My Lord, I have borne a female child, and Allah knew better what she had borne. And the female is not like the male. I've named it Mary, and I commend her and her offspring to your care against evil of the outcast Satan. Thereupon her Lord accepted her with a gracious acceptance and made her grow up in a worthy fashion, and he charged Zechariah with her care. Whenever Zechariah visited her in the sanctuary, he would find provision with her. He said, O Mary, from where does this come for you? She said, It comes from Allah. Allah provides whomever He wishes without any reckoning.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines. Israeli occupation forces continue their genocide against Palestinians as Washington keeps the UN from imposing a ceasefire. Yemen's army says all Israeli-bound ships will be targeted unless the needed food and medicines are allowed into the besieged Gaza Strip. Also in the headlines, people across the world are showing their rage against the U.S. and Israel's ongoing war crimes against Palestinians.
Welcome to the studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us.
Israel is pressing ahead with its genocidal war on the Gaza Strip as more people in the besieged Palestinian territory fall victim to the regime's onslaught. A spokesperson for Gaza's health ministry says hundreds are being killed each day and thousands wounded. According to numerous reports, the regime has once again used internationally banned white phosphorus bombs on different regions of the Strip. Dozens of people were also killed when Israeli warplanes bombed residential buildings in two refugee camps. Health officials say that many hospitals have stopped functioning and the remaining ones are struggling to cope with an overwhelming number of injured people. The death toll from more than 2 months of Israeli strikes has now topped 17,700. The Al-Hassan Brigades keeps fighting invading Israeli forces in Gaza and launching retaliatory attacks against targets inside the occupied territories. The group fired missiles at the Magin kibbutz and also the Ra'im military base. Heavy clashes also took place in Jabalia and Khan Yunis. The Al-Hassan Brigades blew up a building with dozens of IOF soldiers inside in Gaza City, leaving casualties. They also targeted an Israeli tank and several military vehicles in Khan Yunis. Palestinian resistance fighters hit a number of Israeli command rooms near Gaza City with mortar shells. The regime's army says it has lost over 100 soldiers since launching a ground invasion in Gaza. However, resistance groups say that Israel is concealing the real number of casualties. The UN Security Council resolution calling for a ceasefire in Gaza has been blocked by the U.S. despite international outcry to stop Israeli onslaught in the besieged territory. Experts say Washington's unequivocal support has emboldened the regime to continue its genocidal war.
2 months into the Israeli onslaught on Gaza, and the massacre has passed all extremes. Nearly 18,000 Palestinians, most of them women and children, have been killed. Tens of thousands have been wounded. There is no safe zone left in Gaza amid relentless Israeli attacks from the air, ground, and sea. Schools, hospitals, and residential buildings are regularly bombed. The infrastructure in Gaza Strip, the world's biggest open prison, which has already been under the Israeli siege over the past 16 years, has collapsed. According to the United Nations, nearly half of Gaza's 2.3 million population face starvation amid growing risk of epidemic ahead of the cold snap. Rallies are held around the globe in condemnation of the Israeli genocide in Gaza. Protesters demand an immediate end to the brutal aggression. Still, Israel's staunch ally, the United States, says it does not support a ceasefire.
We do not support calls for an immediate ceasefire.
The United States vetoed the UN Security Council resolution, backed by many countries, calling for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. This was not the first time the United States vetoes a UN resolution against Israel. Washington has already rejected more than 40 UN resolutions condemning the Israeli atrocities. However, the latest U.S. veto on ceasefire in Gaza has sparked controversies amid the genocide by the Israeli military against Palestinians. The director of Doctors Without Borders has lashed out at the U.S., saying Washington stands alone in voting against humanity. Palestinian envoy to the UN, Riyad Mansour, lamented the sad day in history of the Security Council.
Today was a sad day in the history of the Security Council. For those who were unable to see things as they should have seen it, and they saw it differently. We will not give up. We will continue our efforts. We will continue knocking on the door of the Security Council until it wakes up and shoulder its responsibility by stopping this criminal war against the Palestinian people, particularly the children among us who are the best among us.
Observers believe that the U.S. unequivocal support for Israel has emboldened the regime, allowing it to commit genocide against Palestinians in Gaza. Israel is the largest recipient of the U.S. foreign military support. The regime receives $3.8 billion in military aid from the U.S. annually, with Washington seeking to allocate an additional $14 billion emergency fund for Tel Aviv. The U.S. veto and the inaction of the international community regarding the Israeli genocide in Gaza can be seen as yet another indication of the fact that the people of Palestine have no alternative but armed resistance to counter the Israeli aggression and stand up for their rights.
The Yemeni army says all ships destined for Israel are legitimate targets unless the needed food and medicine are allowed into the Gaza Strip. In a statement, the spokesman for the Yemeni armed forces, Yahya Sari, warned all ships and shipping companies against dealing with Israeli ports. He said the decision was made due to the regime's continued horrific massacres, genocidal war, and siege against Palestinians in Gaza. The decision is the latest in a series of retaliatory operations by the Yemeni army against Israel. Since October 7, they've seized several Israeli-linked vessels in waters around Yemen. Political commentator Hossein Al-Bukhaiti says the Yemeni army's decision was made because Western countries, especially the U.S., continue to support the regime's genocide in Gaza by sending weapons to the Tel Aviv regime.
This Yemeni action from the beginning of taking Israeli ship and targeting another two, and as well targeting south of the occupied Palestine, especially in Eilat, is all because the massacre and the genocide that has been happening against, as they say in this latest statement, against our brother and sister in Palestine, especially in Gaza. That's why Yemen have actually expanded its demand and not only, as they say, targeting ships belong to Israeli company, but they said as well any ship that's heading toward any Israeli port, it will. They have sent the same warning. It doesn't matter what nationality this ship will be taken, if possible. If not, those ships will be targeted either by missiles or by drones or cruise missiles. Because what Yemeni now is seeing that what's happening in Gaza, you see that many countries, especially Western countries, who are saying that they are representing the free world, they are the one who actually supporting Israeli genocide. I mean, especially from the United States, thousands of tons of weapons and types of munitions has been sent to Israel, as well from Britain, from France, from Germany, and those countries as well, they have sent their warship and as well their drones to help the Israeli in their killing of the Palestinian people in Gaza.
Israeli occupation forces have stormed the city of Tubas in northern West Bank, triggering intense clashes with resistance fighters in and around the city. Reports said Israeli forces bombed at least two homes inside the city, causing unspecified casualties. Occupation forces also arrested at least eight Palestinian youths after raiding a number of homes. In response, resistance fighters targeted occupation vehicles with explosive devices south of the city. Israeli violence has intensified in the territory since the beginning of Israel's onslaught on Gaza. The Palestinian Authority says attacks by Israeli forces and settlers in the West Bank have killed at least 280 Palestinians since October 7. Our correspondent Monica Neal joined us earlier for more details on the latest Israeli raids into the occupied West Bank.
This time, the Israelis raided the center of Tubas, and they bombed two houses in the Al-Naqar neighborhood in Tubas. A number of Palestinians had been killed. It's not clear why the Israeli forces had bombed those two houses, but usually Israeli troops bomb and explode or destroy Palestinian-owned houses. Those houses of Palestinians who could be martyrs or prisoners who carried out anti-Israeli operations and killed Israeli soldiers. So the Israelis continue to use collective punishment against the family members of Palestinians, whether martyrs or prisoners who carried out anti-Israeli operations. Elsewhere in the occupied West Bank, the Israeli troops had raided the refugee camp of Qalandia in less than half an hour from now. The Israeli troops are still storming the Qalandia refugee camp, south Ramallah and north Al-Quds.
The UNICEF spokesman has slammed the global inaction to lessen the sufferings of Palestinians in the Gaza Strip.
I was in Ukraine when families just like these were forced to flee and the world opened its heart to them. I do not understand now why the world has closed its eyes.
As internally displaced people continues to increase, as Israel orders Khan Yunis residents to evacuate the city center. Israel has expanded its ground assault into the southern half of the Gaza Strip by pushing into Khan Yunis, where the regime had previously said that it was safe. Israel has not spared anyone and anywhere in the besieged territory while its attacks on life-saving infrastructure has intensified. The Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is under fire once again as thousands of people rally calling for his resignation. The demonstrations were held in Tel Aviv and in Haifa. They slammed Netanyahu for the Israeli military's failure to free the captives held by Palestinian resistance movement Hamas. So far, after 64 days of war, the regime has failed to release any of the captives by military means and achieve any of its stated objectives of the war. Israel has been the scene of anti-Netanyahu rallies for months. The Israeli prime minister has been charged with fraud, bribery, and the breach of trust in three cases filed in 2019. His trial resumed last Monday after a two-month pause. Rallies have been held across the world in solidarity with Palestinians in the occupied West Bank and the Gaza Strip. Thousands joined the pro-Palestine march in London, demanding an end to the genocide in Gaza. Demonstrators called on the UK government to stop supporting the genocidal campaign against Palestinians. Similar protests were held in Austria's Vienna, Italy's Milan, and Denmark's Aarhus, with protesters voicing their support for Palestinians and calling for a permanent ceasefire in Gaza. Also, hundreds of protesters in the Emirati city of Dubai marched in solidarity with Gaza outside of the COP28 climate conference venue. Meanwhile, a coalition of major factions in Palestine has called for a global strike on Monday in solidarity with the Palestinian people.
As Israeli bombs continue to shatter lives and limbs in Gaza, calls for them to stop continue to grow louder. More than 100,000 Britons in London have joined protesters in other European capitals to repeat the same demands.
Ceasefire, obviously, but obviously I want a political solution. That means that everyone in the region can live with dignity.
This genocide has to stop. It's a genocidal war supported by a British government which sees no reality and no humanity.
Reality and humanity that these demonstrators are here to highlight. And as always, they are a mixed crowd. Muslims, Christians, people of no faith, and Jewish people such as Amy, who are saying, not in our name.
I reject this whole idea that Israel is the only safe space for Jews, because there is nothing safe about having a country that is illegally occupying another group of people who are already living there.
In addition to calling for an end to the bloodshed, the protesters here say they are outraged by the double standards, by the government's complicit silence in the massive atrocities that Israel is committing against the Palestinians, and also its refusal to listen to calls for a permanent ceasefire.
The rally comes hot on the heels of a UN Security Council vote on a humanitarian pause, which the US vetoed and the UK abstained from.
The fact that our government is one of only two that fails to vote for that is utterly, utterly shameful. The message of the British government at the moment to the Palestinian people is not enough of you have died.
What is the point of these protests if the leaders aren't listening, one might ask? But there are signs that public pressure is working.
We're seeing a shift in the position of European governments like France. Now, why are they shifting? It's not suddenly that Emmanuel Macron has woken up and found a conscience. He's been put under pressure by recognizing popular opinion in his country. We are in the US position. Yes, they vetoed. Yes, they're under pressure. Israel, you need to stop killing so many civilians. So to keep up the same in the UK.
Whether or not governing to their people, without a permanent ceasefire, mass Palestine solidarity demonstrations such as this one will become a common sight in Western capitals. Saipur Rizzo, London.
Lebanese media say that Israel has attacked the UN peacekeeping position in the country's south. Local sources say that an Israeli tank targeted the UN interim forces in Lebanon. UNIFIL said no peacekeepers were injured, but a watchtower was damaged. The peacekeeping mission said that it's verifying the source of the fire. The Israeli regime has rejected the allegations. That is while Israeli gunfire. UNIFIL was set up in 1978 to monitor the withdrawal after they invaded Lebanon. Syria's prime minister is in Tehran for a three-day visit aimed at implementing the agreements inked during President Raisi's visit to Damascus back in May. The top Syrian official will also take part in the 15th meeting of the High Committee of Iran-Syria Economic Cooperation. Gisumi Shahmedi has the details.
Signaling the dawn of a new era of enhanced cooperation. Less than 6 months after the Iranian president's historic trip to Damascus, Syria's prime minister is in Tehran with a high-ranking delegation for a three-day visit that will include meetings with Iran's president, the parliament speaker, and the secretary of the Supreme National Security Council, all in line with the implementation of bilateral agreements signed during President Raisi's visit to Syria back in May. The Syrian prime minister signed six agreements with Iran's vice president Mohammad Mokhber that will pave the way for taking practical measures to boost cooperation based on the bilateral agreements.
Strengthening ties with Syria is among Iran's strategies that leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has always emphasized, and Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi has also pursued. We are determined to broaden economic cooperation with Syria. Our main priority is peace and security in the region and the independence and welfare of the Syrian people.
Both Iran and Syria are now looking forward to strengthen ties in various areas, including trade, oil and energy, engineering, housing, communications and technology, as well as tourism and pilgrimage to holy sites. In this regard, developing transportation routes between the two countries has been one of the major achievements of the top Syrian official's trip to Tehran. The visit comes as the Iran-Syria Joint Economic Commission is underway in Tehran, holding its 15th round of meetings, which the Syrian prime minister has attended in order to give the go-ahead for implementing bilateral trade agreements, most notably setting up a free trade zone and removing trade tariffs based on the free trade deal between Tehran and Damascus. With the Syrian prime minister's trip to Tehran and the implementation of bilateral agreements, Iran and Syria are now closer than ever, entering a new era of strengthened ties and enhanced cooperation. Gisumi Shahmadi, Tehran.
And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now. Thank you.
When the whole world is silent towards oppression, even one voice becomes powerful. IRIB English Radio, the voice of the voiceless. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
On Sundays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. In the name of Allah, from whom I hope for nothing but bounty, and from whom I fear nothing but justice. I rely only upon His word, and I cling only to His cord. In Thee I seek sanctuary. O possessor of pardon and good pleasure, from wrong and enmity, and from the changes of time, and the recurrence of sorrows, and from the striking of mishaps, and from the expiration of my term before preparation and readiness. From Thee I seek guidance to that wherein is righteousness and being set right. From Thee I seek help in that which is linked to success and favorable response. Thee I beseech for the garment of well-being and its completion, and for the covering of health and its permanence. I seek refuge in Thee, my Lord, from the goadings of the Satans. And I seek protection in Thy sovereignty from the injustice of the sovereigns. So accept my past prayers and fasting, and make my tomorrow and what is after better than my present hour and my today. And exalt me in my clan and my people, and protect me in my waking and my sleeping. For Thou art Allah, the best guardian, and Thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, I am quit before Thee on this day of mine and on all Sundays that follow it, of associating others with Thee and of heresy. And I devote my supplication sincerely to Thee, addressing myself to Thy response. And I observe the acts of obedience to You for the hope of Your rewards. So, bless Muhammad, the best of Thy creation, the summoner to Thy truth. Exalt me with Thy exaltation, which is never made to suffer loss. And protect me with Thy eye, which never sleeps. And seal my affair by cutting me off from everything but Thee and my life with forgiveness. Surely, Thou art the All-Forgiving, the All-Compassionate.
Limelight. Surviving Gazans live amid ominous preconditions for outbreaks of waterborne diseases, especially deadly to children. A mounting number of unburied corpses, unsafe drinking water, overcrowding in impromptu to mass shelters where sick people are denied any access to healthcare, as well as a breakdown of basic sewage and sanitation systems. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Palestine Chronicle wrote, speaking from a hospital ward about 50 meters from where a bomb had just exploded, UNICEF spokesperson James Elder raised his voice over the sounds of children screaming. In a video posted on X, he emphasized that Gaza's healthcare system is overwhelmed. Pointing at children packed into the ward of a hospital he said was operating at 200% capacity, Elder insisted the hospital cannot take more children with the wounds of war, with the burns, with the shrapnel littering their bodies, with the broken bones. Calling it a war on children, Elder warned that inaction by those with influence is allowing the killing. Those with influence among authorities in the United States and the occupied territories must reckon not only with the reckless carnage they are inflicting on children. They must also grasp the likelihood of an exponentially increased death toll from battlefields illnesses afflicting children. Surviving Gazans live amid ominous preconditions for outbreaks of waterborne diseases, especially deadly to children. A mounting number of unburied corpses, unsafe drinking water, overcrowding in impromptu to mass shelters where sick people are denied any access to healthcare, as well as a breakdown of basic sewage and sanitation systems. The World Health Organization warns that Gaza is on the precipice of major disease outbreaks. On November 15, 2023, the World Health Organization reported more than 44,000 cases of diarrhea had been documented in Gaza since mid-October, already a dramatic increase compared to previous years and after only 2 months of the bombardment by the Zionist regime. Margaret Harris, a spokesperson for the WHO, said, "Eventually, we will see more people dying from disease than from bombardment if we are not able to put back together this health system. Yet, without electricity and fuel, it's impossible to repair Gaza's collapsed healthcare system." The Zionist regime's authorities cut off Gaza's electricity supply after October 11th, according to UNOCHA, and fuel reserves for Gaza's sole power plant have been dangerously depleted. History repeatedly shows that children in war zones bear the brunt of punishment as bombing wars give way to even more lethal economic war, and what ought to be regarded as biological warfare against children. It's noteworthy that the Zionist regime is one of only 8 world regimes not to have signed the Biological Weapons Convention. According to reports, the suffering inflicted on Iraqi children following the 1991 war and the ensuing years of merciless economic sanctions is well known to the United States regime and the Zionist regime authorities. When the U.S. Desert Storm bombing war against Iraq ended on February 28, 1991, a new kind of warfare proved far more devastating than even the worst of the bombing. By 1995, UN workers recognized that children were dying, first by the hundreds, then by the thousands, and eventually by the hundreds of thousands because economic sanctions prevented necessary access to medicines, clean water, and adequate food. The U.S. military itself predicted epidemic levels of waterborne diseases would break out in Iraq because the U.S. bombing had so badly damaged the country's underground water pipelines, causing cracks allowing sewage to seep into water used by civilians. 13 years of punitive economic sanctions cost the lives of countless Iraqis who couldn't possibly have been held accountable for the actions. Elderly people, sick people, toddlers, and infants. A similar pattern emerges if we turn the gaze toward the Saudi aerial bombing of Yemen from 2015 to 2018. The Saudi attacks against vital sewage and sanitation facilities and against the electrical plants which powered them contributed to severe shortage of potable water. The Saudis were also known to bomb sites where Yemenis were digging their own wells. A report from Save the Children, issued in November 2018, estimated that at least 85,000 children died from extreme hunger since the war began in Yemen in 2015. The worst cholera outbreak ever recorded infected 2.26 million and cost nearly 4,000 lives. Attacks on hospitals and clinics led to closure of more than half of Yemen's pre-war facilities. Besieged on all sides, 3.65 million Yemenis were internally displaced. An entire generation of Yemeni children will suffer the trauma and disease caused by Saudi bombings using weapons supplied by U.S. regime and other Western manufacturers. Dr. Yara Asi, a professor of global health management, points out that the Gaza Strip had fragile health and water, sanitation, and hygiene sectors long before October 7th events. The health system of Gaza, one of the most densely populated places in the world, has long been plagued by underfunding and the effects of the blockade imposed by the fabricated child killer regime of Israel in 2007. In early 2023, an estimated 97% of water in the enclave was unfit to drink, and more than 12% of child mortality cases were caused by waterborne ailments. Diseases including typhoid fever, cholera, and hepatitis A are very rare in areas with functional and adequate water systems. Now, OCHA reports over 1.8 million people in Gaza, or nearly 80% of the population, are internally displaced. Overcrowding at makeshift UNRWA shelters, significantly increased cases of diarrhea, acute respiratory infection, skin infection, and lice. Without wells and water desalination, dehydration and waterborne diseases are mounting threats. In a recently published investigation by PLUS 972 magazine and Local Call, an Israeli intelligence veteran notes, the Zionist regime's detailed information on where Gazan civilians are located. Quote, "Nothing happens by accident. When a three-year-old girl is killed in a home in Gaza, it's because someone in the army decided it wasn't a big deal for her to be killed. That it was a price worth paying in order to hit another target. We are not Hamas. These are not random rockets. Everything is intentional. We know exactly how much collateral damage there is in every home."
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
Farewell to life.
Part 2.
The moment of farewell is one of the hardest moments for anyone. Whether it is saying farewell to your family, your home, your homeland, and the most significant of all, saying farewell to life. But for a fighter, the hardest one is to say farewell to their arms. Palestinian fighter and leader Yasser Arafat was a man who experienced each and every one of these farewells throughout his life. Now, he had turned into a comatose in a hospital bed in France before he experienced those farewells. His first painful farewell took place 50 years ago when he witnessed a series of events that changed his course of life. It was springtime in the small village of Deir Yassin. The inhabitants of the village did not want any war with the intruders. But some time later, the United Nations divided Palestine into two Arab and Jewish sectors and caused rifts instead of solving the differences.
The resolution of the Duck Committee for Palestine was adopted by 33 votes, 13 against, 10 abstentions.
After the UN resolution, the Palestinians possessed only 45% of their country in two disjointed segments, namely the Gaza Strip and the West Bank. The rest of the 55% was given to the minority Jews with a 500,000 population. By recognizing Israel as a so-called state, a war started. Now the Jews could expel the Palestinians out of their homes and replace them with the newly arrived Jewish immigrants. A year later, Israelis were the winners of the war. The 65,000 strong army that had come from seven Arab states to help the Palestinians could not do much. They were less than half the Israeli forces in numbers. On the other hand, the Israelis' newly purchased equipment, compared to the Palestinians' old and dilapidated equipment, made many people disappointed. The immigrant Jews, who had only purchased only 2% of Palestine's land from the British, were now occupying 70% of the land. The war claimed the lives of 25,000 people and left 700,000 Palestinians homeless and displaced. They migrated to neighboring countries. People lived cold and grim lives away from home. Their only hope was to return to their homes one day. Tensions were on the rise along the borders. The armed forces on the Jordanian and Syrian borders were on high alert. To support them, Gamal deployed 80,000 troops to the Sinai Desert and the Gaza Strip. The King of Jordan traveled to Cairo to sign a defense pact with Egypt. Syria and Iraq also joined the pact. The Middle East turned into a powder keg. A single spark could burn it in flames. Israel found itself surrounded from all sides, so it declares a state of emergency in all of its military bases. The commander of the Israeli army claimed that they're ready to enter any war the next day. All eyes are fixed on Gamal, so he'd start the war and end the Israeli entity before it could celebrate its 20th birthday. As a next step, he blocks all maritime crossings for Israel. 9 months later, the news of an explosion shocks everyone. A roadside blast targets a bus in Israeli-occupied territory, leading to the death of two Israelis. The Israeli army announces it will give an unforgettable lesson to the fighters who carried out this attack. A small group named Fatah claims responsibility for the operation. Their base was in a small town of Karameh, located near the Jordanian border. Gamal was worried a new war would create trouble for Arab states, so he asked the Fatah forces to immediately leave town. The Jordanian army made the same request, but Fatah members wanted to stay, even if it meant they had to give up their lives. Israel thought such a small group wouldn't be much of trouble for them, so they immediately sent 15,000 troops and 50 tanks to the village. The situation was dangerous for Israel. They were looking for a way to stop Arafat. It seemed impossible in a region where no country recognized Israel. At the same time, when tensions are rising in Lebanon over Arafat's presence, Fatah stepped up its activities. Some people in Lebanon did not want Arafat to use the land as a base for a war against Israel. All the opposition came from the Falangis movement, an organization that was created from the merger of some Christian Lebanese groups. Arafat did not want to destabilize Lebanon, but as the Christian paramilitary groups continued their provocations, some Fatah forces got into conflict with them. Once again, it was springtime, and Palestinians hit hard luck. In a surprise attack on a bus, 27 Palestinians and Lebanese were killed. The Falangis claimed responsibility for the attack. The Lebanese government asked them to surrender those responsible, but they refused and took control of the area. No one expected such an attack, as the Falangis were just a political movement in Lebanon without much military power. A young man named Bachir Gemayel becomes commander of the armed militia of the Falangis. A month before the attack, they rapidly transformed into a disciplined and well-equipped military force at a time when they received multiple ships full of weapons and military equipment. Something was written on all the equipment made in Israel. It meant that Israel has started a proxy war against Arafat. At the moment when Arafat needed foreign help more than ever, things did not go well. In Egypt, Gamal Abdel Nasser's advisor and deputy succeeded him, but he took a different path.
Let us agree that whatever happens between us, we should solve it together through, talks rather than going to war.
Egypt could retake the Sinai Desert after 20 years of Israeli occupation and then avoid conflict with Israel for the sake of establishing peace. But it wasn't the end of the story. Arafat asked different parties to help establish a ceasefire. In no time, the pressure piles up on Lebanon. A part of the Israeli army enters southern Lebanon with the help of the Phalanges. Arafat decided to seek help from outside the Middle East to solve the problem. Arafat thought that the U.S. was the only country that could help him in this matter. Israel accepted the ceasefire at the request of Washington. A year has passed after the ceasefire, and during this period, Israel kept many Israeli forces on the border on standby. They wanted to speed up the war, so they appointed Ariel Sharon as the Minister of Military Affairs. Violence was the most prominent characteristic. In violation of the ceasefire deal, on the morning of the 3rd of June, 1983, Israeli forces prepare for all-out attack. 120,000 soldiers, backed up by 1,600 tanks, moved on Lebanon. Only in 2 days, the Israeli army reached the outskirts of Beirut without any major impediment. Even resistance within the cities could not slow down the Israeli advance. Arafat issued the order to retreat to all of his forces in order to buy time to reinforce. Now, the enemy was behind the gates of the city.
We are here, and we'll continue to be here, and we will defend this city, the first, it is very important, it is the first Arab capital which the Israeli are blockading. It is very important. You have to put in consideration what it means for the next generation. What have been done, you will pay its price.
Sharon's helicopter landed at Beirut's military airport so he could meet with the Phalange leaders. Arafat's bases were bombarded at his orders. For him, destroying Arafat was the main goal. A missile directly hits his office. Arafat had left the office a few moments earlier. He was cornered, he was completely surrounded, and had no way to escape. For 9 weeks, Gray clouds covered the sky over Beirut, the defenseless city. Israel claimed that the targets of the attack were Fatah forces, but it is unarmed civilians who suffered the most. Arafat had to make a hard choice. To what extent did the people have to pay the price for the war? What had to be done in order to get out of this situation? And who could help him?
Good evening. President Reagan said today he's lost patience with the continuing bloodshed in Lebanon, and he all but demanded that it stop, telling reporters he intends to make that point quite firmly with Israeli officials.
American representatives enter Beirut to establish a ceasefire once again. The U.S. won Arafat's confidence and, more importantly, convinced him to take all Fatah forces out of Lebanon. In return, Arafat asked for the security of Palestinian refugee camps. In the end, the Falangists also reached their goal. After 7 years of war and bloodshed, their leader was to become the president of Lebanon. Fatah forces said farewell to Lebanon in several stages. After a few days, the final group prepared to leave. Arafat was the last person who was going to say farewell to Lebanon.
This is a part of the long march, yes, to our independent state, to our capital, Palestine, Jerusalem.
Arafat stepped into the path of the unknown with an unknown destination. It seemed that fate had driven a wedge between Arafat and Palestine.
Meanwhile, the number of dead and injured in yesterday's explosion, which killed President-elect Bashir Jamal, has reportedly reached at least 60. No one yet has claimed responsibility for the bombing.
No one knew who carried out the explosion. But the Israelis and Falangists accused the Palestinians. Sharon claimed the Fatah forces had not completely left Palestine and were hiding in Palestinian camps. So he ordered a lockdown on them to find Fatah forces. He went to the Sabra and Shatila camps for the start. Fatah's base was located near the camps. The residents decided not to resist against Israelis and the Falangists. After 3 days, when the Israelis surround the camps, the Falangists were allowed to enter the camps and trigger a catastrophe. According to local sources, 3,000 people died in that massacre. Many of the bodies were beyond recognition. Many were buried in mass graves in order to hide this atrocity. The Lebanese government could only identify 300 of the many victims.
Impossible. Colonel Naftali Bahiri says he thought the Christian militia was sent in to drive out terrorists, not to kill civilians. Do you think it was right to let them in there?
Maybe it was right to let them in, but nobody thought that that's what the result.
Arafat was shocked after he heard the news. He had trusted the U.S., but now faced what he feared most.
Protesting against these massacres and genocides against the Palestinians, which have been planned and organized by the Israelis, by the Israeli troops, and I'm sorry to say, and covered completely by the American administration.
5 months after the Sabra and Shatila massacre, a court hearing was held in Israel to shed light on the event. During the proceedings, it was revealed that the explosion was carried out by a Christian member of a Syrian organization and that the Palestinians had no involvement in the incident. Although Sharon was blamed for the negligence, he continued to remain in his post. And even in the next administration, only his ministry changes. When Arafat wanted to set up Fatah anew, he faced a crisis. He was confused for a few months, but he finally settles down in Tunisia, 3,000 kilometers away from Palestine. The long distance would make it very unlikely that war would be dragged to Tunisia. But at the same time, the distance had made continuing the struggle a daunting task for Fatah.
In the limelight.
According to whistleblowers, the Zionist regime is using an artificial intelligence system to generate targets so fast, based on inputs so broad, that everyone in Gaza is in the crosshairs. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote, it should already have been evident from the scale of death and destruction inflicted on Gaza in recent weeks that the Zionist regime was implementing a policy of ethnic cleansing and genocide against Palestinians in the besieged enclave. Now, Israeli whistleblowers have provided details of how these crimes against humanity are being carried out and how they are being rationalized internally within Israel's military and political echelons. An extraordinary series of testimonies jointly published by the Israel-based publications 972 and Local Call recently established that the huge death toll of Palestinian civilians is in fact integral to the Zionist regime's war aims, not an unfortunate side effect. The known deaths so far are estimated at least 16,000, with a further 6,000 missing, presumably crushed under rubble. Two-thirds of those killed by the Zionist regime are women and children. 2 years ago, during an earlier attack on Gaza, the Zionist regime military officials admitted for the first time that a computer was supplying them with potential targets. The intention appears to have been to bypass the restraints imposed by human assessments of likely casualties by outsourcing the killings to a machine. The whistleblowers confirm that given new generous parameters of who and what can be attacked, the artificial intelligence system called Gospel is generating lists of targets so rapidly the military cannot keep up. The Zionist regime's inputs are now so broad that they allow the bombing without warning of high-rise apartment blocks, so long as it can be claimed that one person residing there is believed to have a connection to resistance groups. That helps explain how, according to United Nations figures, some 100,000 homes in Gaza have been leveled or made uninhabitable, and 1.7 million Palestinians displaced, or some three-quarters of the enclave's population. In a recent report, The Guardian